Rabbi, so let's begin this week. This week is Parshas Parah. The Balei Musar, or I'm not sure how to express this. It says in Svarim HaKadoshim. Okay, that's a term that's used by
Yesterday was Lejinsi.
Okay, but it says in Svarim HaKadoshim that this Shabbos, the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. This is a very interesting week because it's Parshas Parah, and yet it's also the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. You don't normally have such a thing. Normally, Parshas HaChodesh is the Shabbos before Chodesh Nisan. But this year, Rosh Chodesh Nisan is on Shabbos. Okay, so therefore, this week, Parshas Parah is the Shabbos before Chodesh Nisan. Okay, so the Farshim explain, they point out that just like we all know that the Shabbos before Tishrei is a very holy Shabbos, it's the last Shabbos of the year. Rosh Hashanah, Aleph Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah. The Shabbos before Tishrei, we all are at our best to do tshuva before the Yimei Hadin. Likewise, the Shabbos before Chodesh Nisan is a very serious time. According to Chazal, the world was created in Nisan. It's Machlokes, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua. Was the world created in Tishrei? Was the world created in Nisan? The common compromise to explain Elu, the Elohim Chaim, is to say that the world was created by Machshava. Hashem drew up the blueprints on Rosh Chodesh, on Tishrei. Allah b'machshavta to create the world in Tishrei, but the world was physically created in Chodesh Nisan, according to Rabbi Yeshua. So this week,
the standard of construction.
This week is, on the one hand, the last week, the last Shabbos of the year, and Shabbos, the last acharon chaviv. The last Shabbos of the year is something which is chaviv. It's a time to reflect, to look back at the entire year. It's a time to look forward, to prepare, to plan, to anticipate the coming year. And that's the Shabbos. It's a serious business. When we say this Shabbos, chazak, chazak, v'nis chazek, it's not just a chazak, chazak, v'nis chazek on Chumash Shemos. It's a chazak, chazak, v'nis chazek on last year, on the previous year. That's a whole kufa of life that has passed, and it's a chazak chazak v'nis chazek. You know, v'nis chazak chazak is in the past. Chazak chazak, strengthen what you've taken from the past. V'nis chazek, strengthen yourself for what's yet to come. And it's Rosh Hashanah. It's a very serious business. It's the beginning of a new year. We're entering into the Haschol, the Le Shabbos. Everything that happens in the future is always hinted to in the Shabbos before. And that is an important lesson to focus on when we come to this Shabbos, B'yachad L'kudei Parshas Parah. Okay, that's one idea. Another important idea, just the point to mention, is that Parah, we're learning this year Parah after we finish learning Vayakel Bikudei. And this year appears to be the most typical year. Sometimes we have an Ibiyar, we have a leap year, and then everything gets pushed forward. This year, the way the calendar works out this year appears to be a very, very standard, typical year where Parshas Parah will be after we learn Vayakel Bikudei. Parshas Parah, we all know, is the quintessential chok, a mitzvah which is beyond our understanding. There's a very well-known Gemara in relation to Dama ben Messina. The Gemara talks about the mitzvah of Kibud Avoim. Ad Heichon, how far does the mitzvah of Kibud Avoim go? The Gemara relates, there was a non-Jew by the name of Dama ben Messina who had in his possession a stone that was needed for the ephod. It was worth a hoin rav, and the Chachamim arrived in his home to purchase the stone from this individual, Dama ben Messina, and the key to the vault was underneath the pillow of his father. And if this was a Jew, the father would have killed the son for not waking him up. Yes, and it just goes to show. And Echnami, it goes to that by a non-Jew, I couldn't care less about you. I couldn't care less. Who's going to pocket the money? The son was going to pocket the money, not the father. So it had nothing, there was no relationship between the father and the son. It was just a question of waking up the son. But it's a pella. But the situation was, the son did not want to disturb the sleep of the father. so he forfeited all this enormous wealth and to give honor to his father. And he later said, later, and a year later, he was born to him. So the Chacham, obviously, they got this stone elsewhere. And this person, he lost out on this money. And a year later, he was rewarded that it was born to him a para aduma. Para aduma is extremely rare. Every so often they have in the news, they have video clips online, they have a para aduma, and then you never hear about it. Obviously, the para aduma, it became disqualified somehow.
TV series that's based on a para aduma.
Para aduma, what's it called?
It just came out.
Yeah, the opening thing.
It's a para aduma.
It's a para
aduma. Para aduma? What about a para aduma?
Watching it, besides us, understands. In Norway.
Okay, so a para aduma, so he was so the Mefarshim, what's the significance? What is the significance of that the reward for Adama ben Asina was a para aduma? So the very popular, very famous, well known part is that ki bud avoim from all of the Tayag mitzvos is the mitzvah that is the most, is self understood. It's a mitzvah sichlius. It's logical. Even if the Torah would not tell us to give honor, to care for our parents, we would care for our parents anyway. It's logical. We have an obligation, we have a duty to give kavod, to give honor. They're the ones who brought us into this world. They have been kind to us. They have bestowed upon us love and money and shelter and food and so on and so forth. So therefore, we only have an obligation. It's only natural that we should reciprocate by taking care of them when they get older. So, and Dom Ben Asina understood this. He fulfilled this mitzvah. Mida, kenegin, mida for the mitzvah, the most sichli, is the reward, the mitzvah that is the most esoteric. Paraduma, the mitzvah that is beyond human understanding. Even Shlomo HaMelech, the Chacham Mikol Adam, said, Rachoik, said what says that the mitzvah, paraduma, is the mitzvah which I do not relate to. It's too deep. It's too deep to understand. The only one that really fully understood paraduma, according to Chazal, was Moshe Rabbeinu. So I want to say is that really, in essence, what we are doing this week by learning Vayakal Bakude and then learning paraduma is we are bringing out this Maimer Chazal, but we're bringing it out in a much greater degree. What do I mean? How does the beginning of the Chumash Shemos begin? The beginning of Chumash Shemos begins with Klal Yisrael. There's a Shibud, and there's a person who's nameless. Amram. Vayelech ish mi beis Levi, vayikach espas Levi. Vatar vatele bein. They have a child, and vayad, this child has no name. The father has no name. The mother has no name. The baby has no name. Vatera oso ki tofu. And they saw that this child was tof. What does it mean, tov? There are many interpretations of Chazal. It was nolad mohol. When he was born, the whole bias was nesmali oira. But let's give a homiletic interpretation. The only place in the Torah where it tells us that reward for mitzvah will be tov is kibud avoim. In the Aseres HaDibros, in Parashas Ve'eschanan, in the second Dibros, Kabeid es avicha v'yasinecha, leman yitavloch v'harachta yam. It will be good for you. Moshe Rabbeinu, he was only an infant, is described, Shulchan also, Shulchan is called Man Garach, it's the Yitav, only Harach Yam. What does it say? The Yitav also, the Yitav, only Harach Yam. Okay, but this mitzvah, this is one of the two mitzvahs, let's assume Shulchan also, so this one of the two mitzvahs, Man Yitav Lach. Moshe Rabbeinu was a child born to parents. And the Pasuk says that I don't understand. Also, by Shluch HaKan as well. By Shluch HaKan. Okay, so both. But by Kibud Avoim is unique in Tayag Mitzvos that we have the mitzvah, the Torah gives reward, Laman Yitavloch. It's not to be ignored that when Moshe Rabbeinu, a child is born, the way the child is described, even though the child is only an infant, is Vatere Oso Kitofu. He's a good child. What does it mean he was a good child? This infant, already it could be detected, was good to the parents. A person that is mechabed his parents, the Torah says, you mechabed your parents, leman yitav loch v'harachta yamim. It will be good for you. The Torah clearly connects the dots. That toiv, the reward for kibud avoim is yitav loch. Moshe Rabbeinu, the very first moment he was born, parents on the street, they say that every list of parents of a newborn, they have a whole bunch of kids. This one, low maintenance. Doesn't give me a hard time. This child gives me a hard time. This child, every child is different. Even an infant, you hear parents saying, this baby is good. This baby lets me sleep, eats, doesn't give me a hard time, doesn't have diaper rashes. It makes it good for me. Moshe Rabbeinu, and we don't know what it was, is described as kitofu, which means Moshe, they already sensed, al derech drush, that this child is going to be good to his parents. The Torah ends. How does the parasha Chumash end? The Chumash Shmos ends with Moshe Rabbeinu building the Mishkan, Moshe Rabbeinu succeeding in accomplishing the ultimate goal of creation, bringing down the Shechina to this world. In Parashas Truma Tetzaveh, Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned in reference to the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu Tetzaveh's name is completely absent, and even in Truma, where the Mishkan is described, Moshe Rabbeinu's name barely appears at all in reference. But when it comes to Vayakal Pekudi, Moshe Rabbeinu actually builds the Mishkan, he puts the Mishkan up, Moshe Rabbeinu's name is mentioned 18 times. Ka'asher tziva Hashem es Moshe. Look what Moshe 18 times connected the 18 brachos in Shimon Esrei. That's one of the famous Mavari Chazal. Moshe's name is mentioned in Pekudei 18 times connected the 18 brachos in Shimon Esrei. So we have over here, look at Chumash Shemos from beginning to end. A child is born. Child who's nameless is born to a set of parents who are nameless. Was there ever a child in the history of the world that gave more nachas to their parents, was mechabe their parents more than Moshe Rabbeinu? You could have a child that can dress his father in silk and bring him the best food, but the ultimate nachas a child gives to his parents is kiddush shem shemayim, accomplishing something for the world, accomplishing something significant in this world. People say, what could this person accomplish? Ashrei yoldoi, isn't that what it says in Pirkei Avos? What? Yeladato. That's when a person does a mitzvah, a person accomplished something, right away the credit is given to the parents. The parents, look what they did. Is there anyone, look what Moshe Rabbeinu did in Chumash Shemos. Moshe Rabbeinu, he takes Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, he brings them to Har Sinai, he gives them the Torah, he comes down, he makes a Mishkan, a Mokam, the Hashuas Hashchina. Can there be a greater nachas? Can there be a greater nachas to parents? Impossible. The whole Chumash Shemos, from beginning to end, is the story of Kibud Avoim. Vayelech ish mi beis Levi, vayikach es bas Levi, vatar ish avat. It's the mamsh perik, it's the very beginning. The whole introduction to Perik Av is only a hagdama to Vayelech ish mi beis Levi. And this child, right away, the Torah tells us what's going to be with this child. Kitovu. And the whole Chumash Shemos goes on to show what it means to be tov, what it means to give nachas to parents, what he accomplishes for Klal Yisrael, and how he brings the Shechina down. Moshe at the end says, Moshe Rabbeinu, we accomplish and bring the Shechina down to this world. And we come to the very end, and even the very last psukim, it says that Moshe could not enter into the oil until Hashem said, come. Until the clouds departed. Look at the last Rashi in the parasha. The clouds departed, and Moshe can enter, and Moshe can speak to the Ribbono Shel Olam. This is the spitz of what a human being can become, and all this goes back to give cover to the parents. And what is Kibud Avoim? It's a mitzvah sichlius. It's logical. If you put it here on this world, you have a duty to give nachas to your parents. It makes logical sense. They put you here for a purpose, you have to fulfill your mission. And what do we read after we say this week, Chazak, Chazak, V'nis Chazek, after we finish the story of Kibud Avoim? Vayomer, Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe, V'el Aaron. Bahar, see what does the post say? Vayedaber, Zos, how does it begin? Zos Chukas HaTorah. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe v'el Aaron. Lamar. Zos Chukas HaTorah, V'yikhu Eilecho Parafora Aduma. Better than Dama ben Nesina. Dama ben Nesina got a couple of bucks. It was born to him in his heard, it was born to him, a paraduma, oh, an asset, we'll trade it in, put a few million dollars in the bank. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't just get a paraduma, didn't just find a paraduma roaming around in the desert. Moshe Rabbeinu was instrumental in offering the paraduma and bringing tahara to Klal Yisrael. And not only that, Moshe Rabbeinu was the only human being in the entire Torah, in the entire Tanakh, that Chazal tell us understood the meaning of paraduma. So you take the story of Dama ben Asina, which is the bare bones. Dama ben Asina, he understood Kabe de Savicha v'yasimecha, so don't stare, don't wake up your father. And for that he was rewarded with having born to him a paraduma. That's a mashahu shebemashahu of what we are reenacting in this week's parasha. When we come to the conclusion of Chumash Shemos, when you come to the conclusion of Chazak, v'nis chazek, that we force us to reflect the whole Chumash. The whole Chumash is a story of Kibud Av V'Aim. And what's the maftir? What's the bonus? Paraduma. And not just paraduma, oh, a few dollars. Paraduma. Taharos and Shel Yisrael. This is Parshas Parah. Parshas Parah really should be next week. Should be after Chumash Parshas HaChodesh. The only reason why we learned Paraduma before is because the Taharos and Shel Yisrael is so choshev. It's the real deal. What? You need Tarif Karban Pesach. But the Taharos and Shel Yisrael with Moshe Rabbeinu actually offering it, not just getting money for it, and Moshe Rabbeinu understanding it, that is a Musar Haskel for us. The Musar Haskel for us is Kabeid Esavicha V'yasimecha. Parents do not need to be living. Moshe Rabbeinu, the covenant that Moshe Rabbeinu gave to his parents is not covered, the physical covenant. We don't even find that where Amram died. There's no mention that where Amram died. But this is the covenant. The covenant is that a person fulfilled his tafkin in this world. This is the greatest form of kibud av v'aim one can give to his parents. And for that, the reward is l'man yitav loch v'harachta yamim. And the yitav loch goes to the extreme of extremes of the paraduma. The paraduma, which is considered to be the chok, the quintessential chok, even that is realized, is achieved in the ultimate achievement of the Taharoson Shel Yisrael.
Paraduma is within three letters of Gematria of Moshe.
Paraduma within three. Close, but no cigar. Okay. Okay, let me tell you a short vart that I believe is from the Hadrash Vihoin by Rav Aaron Levin Reisharov. There's a lot of discussion, and this is parasha to define differences between Parashas Truma Tetzaveh and Parashas Vayakal Pekudeh. Differences in how the command to build a Mishkan is presented versus the way it was actually constructed and erected. And one of the differences that stands out is the reference to the Badim of the Oron. There are three things in the Torah, in the Mishkan, where we find a negative commandment. The Badim, Lo Yosuru Mimenu, the Badim may not be removed from the Oron. The Choshen, and the Ephod, the Choshen, the Lo Yizach, I forgot the exact passage, Lo Yizach, a Choshen Mealo Ephod, the Choshen may not be removed from the Ephod, and the third Lo Saseh is the Me'il Lo Yikorea. The Me'il has to be perfect, one piece of cloth, Lo Yikorea, you're not allowed to rip, to rend the Me'il. So one could argue, one would think that maybe when it comes to these three commandments, that you're not allowed to remove the bottom of the aron, you're not allowed to cut the me'il, you're not allowed to remove the ephod from the chosh from the ephod, it's something that's necessary to be mentioned in the commandments in the Parashas Truma Tetzaveh, but it's not necessary to be mentioned in Parashas Vayakal Pekudeh because we're not describing what should be done. We're not describing how it should be made. We're just describing that it was made. If all of these three things were not mentioned in Vayakal Pekudeh, I think we would be very satisfied, we can logically explain why it's absent. The problem, though, is that in Vayakal Pekudeh, two of the three are mentioned. The Me'il, it's explicitly said that when they made the Me'il, it says that the Me'il was not to be cut, not to be ripped. And in reference to the choshen, it said that the choshen is not to be removed from the ephod. So, okay, the Torah may, so once already mentioning these two, you would expect it to say that the badim may not be taken out of the aron. And yet, for some strange reason, which is difficult, there is no mention of the prohibition to remove the badim from the aron in Parshas Vayakel Pekudei. And that begs, why? Why is this different? So the Reish Rav says something very, very, very powerful, very strong, strong mussar. There's a difference between the description of the building of the aron in Parshas Truma versus Parshas Vayakel. In Parshas Truma, it says V'osu es ha'aron. All the kelim, with regard to all the kelim, the pasuk says V'osisa, you shall make the menorah, the osisa, the shulchan, the mizbeach hazav, mizbeach haketor, and choshes. Only in regard to the aron does it say V'osu. Everyone shall make it. And the mefarshim explain, why does it say b'loshen rabim? Everyone has to have a chelek in Torah. Therefore, when it comes to the aron, the menorah, that's for yechidim. The shulchan is ashirus, achidim. But the aron, Torah, there has to be education, Jewish education for every single member of Klal Yisrael. When it comes to parashas ve'achav kudei, for whatever reason, it doesn't say that they made. It says that Bezalel alone crafted the aron. Rashi on the pasuk is disturbed. Why do we only give credit to Bezalel when in Parashas Vayakel Truma the command was for everyone in Klal Yisrael to contribute? Rashi says he was moiser nefesh. Now, we don't know exactly what that means. He was moiser nefesh to perfect the aron, and therefore he gets special credit. The Reish Rav says that's why the badim are missing. Because the badim in Chazal's eyes represent the support of Torah. There are people who learn Torah, and there are people who support Torah. If the whole Klal Yisrael, this is a drush, v'osu es ha'arayin, when you have a situation where the whole Klal Yisrael is involved in supporting Torah, in making the aron, you are guaranteed lo yosuru mimenu. The support, someone will always pay the bills. If everyone is in part of the project of building the aron, the badim, the support, what supports the aron, it will never falter. It will never be taken, be removed. But in being that in Parshas Vayakel, the Torah, for whatever reason, had to describe the aron as being built by an individual, by Bezalel. Whenever an individual is involved in upholding the Torah, no single person, even Bezalel, will be able to do it himself. He can do it himself, but it's not. There's no guarantee that it will remain forever. Lo yosuru mimenu. When you have a situation where one person is upholding the Torah, there's going to come a point in time when the support will come to an end, and we're in trouble. And the Musar Haskel is by contrasting the two together, Parshas Truma with Parshas Vayakel. The Musar Haskel is that everyone always has to support, contribute towards the upkeep of Torah to guarantee that the badim will never be removed from the aron. It's well known that the Chafetz Chaim never did not allow. The Chafetz Chaim, he raised a lot of money in his life in many different projects. The Chafetz Chaim never allowed one person. There were many times, not many times, but there were times when individuals told the Chafetz Chaim, "It's not kedai for you to waste your time. Not wasting your time, but kedai for you to go and spend so much effort in collecting the money. I'll give you all the money, and Mimela, everything will be okay." And he refused. He says, "You can't have one person support an institution single-handedly, because then there's no guarantee that it will be around forever. There always has to be a communal effort to participate in a project to guarantee that the badim will never be removed mimenu." That's a limud musar that the Reish Rav learns by contrasting Vayakel versus Parshas Truma. Let's go to another idea. Another quick idea. We have here Bezalel. Bezalel is the one that gets credit with making the Oru. Now, I'm telling you an idea, and it's not a complete idea, it's a partial idea, and I leave it for you to elaborate. We have Bezalel is given the credit of making the Oru. The question is why? Why Bezalel? Rashi tells us because Bezalel was Moiser Nefesh. Okay, what exactly does that mean? I don't know, but let's try to suggest a Mahalich. Back in Parashat Truma, there is a very when the Torah describes the building of the Aron, it says the Aron shall be plated with gold and silver. The Aron shall be plated with gold and the gold mibayis umichutz tetzapenu. Okay, let me read the pasuk. The pasuk says, and they actually have a picture here, so I should be able to find it very quickly. Okay, here it is. Here is the Aron. Back in Parashas Truma, you shall make the Aron v'tzipisa oso zahav tahar mibayis umichutz tetzapenu. If you were commanded to make the Aron and to fulfill the order of the pasuk, what would you do? We know that Rashi Chazal tells us that the Aron was made from three boxes: a box of gold on the outside, a box of gold on the inside, and the center was the atzei shittim. So it says, make a box of atzei shittim. And take this box, and you shall plate it with tzipisa oso zahav tahar mibayis. What does that mean? Where should you put? What should you do with the atzei shittim? Plate the inside with gold, and then umichutz, and plate the outside with gold. So what would the seder be? You take atzei shittim, and you put the take a box of gold, and you put a box of gold inside. So now I have two boxes. I have the Atzei Shittim, and in the Atzei Shittim is the box of gold. I then pick up both of them together, the wood with the gold, and I put them both into the bigger box. Isn't that what the pasuk says? We start out with Atzei Shittim, Vitzipisa also, cover it with Zohav Tahar, Mibayis, first cover the inside, take the gold box, and put it inside, and then Umichutz, take the combination of the wood with the gold and put this into the bigger box so it's plated from the outside. That is the simple way we would translate the pasuk. Correct?
Yep.
Yet, Rashi here quotes a medrash that really appears in Parashas Pekudei. Rashi tells us the steps. Gimel aroinois osa Bezalel. Rashi actually mentions Bezalel. Bezalel over here is not mentioned. Why does Rashi have to mention Bezalel? That's a very curious question. Why here in Parashas Truma, when there really is no mention of Bezalel at all, is Rashi mentioning Bezalel? The answer is because he's really referring to what? Rashi wants to know, so why is the Gemara referring to Bezalel? Because the pasuk really refers to the Medrash. This Chazal comes from the pasuk in Parashas Vayakel. When he builds the Mishkan, Gimel Aronis Asa Bezalel, Bei Shel Zov Yechad Shel Eitz, Dalet Kesalam Mishulayim L'chol Lechem, each one was a complete box, U'Pesuchim Melamala, they were opened above. Now here Rashi says something that is shocking. Nosan Shel, Rashi doesn't need to say anything more. If the Gemara would stop here, we would be satisfied. This whole thing is not necessary. But yet Rashi goes on, he quotes the Gemara. Nosan Shel Eitz, Besoch Shel Zohov. He takes the wood box and he puts the wood box in the gold box. So what have you plated? The outside or the inside?
The outside.
And then the Nosan Shel Eitz Besoch Shel Zohov. The Shel Zohov. Then you take the small box. Besoch Shel Eitz. The Chippa. Then it says you cover the top and you're done. What's going on? According to the way Rashi describes the process, the pasuk should have said, So Rashi describes the process the opposite than what it says in the pasuk. Haloi davar? It's all in the Mefarshim, they deal with this. And in fact, the Yerushalmi says just the opposite. The Yerushalmi says this exact same story. When Bezalel made the Aron, Bezalel first took the small box, put the small box inside, and then he took the two together and put them in the big box. But that's not what it says in the Bavli, and that's not what's popular in all of the Midrashim, and it's not the way Rashi and Chumash, Rashi, what's going on? So perhaps one question answers the other question. From all of the kelim, the only one that is associated specifically with Betzalel is the Ara. Why? There's another curious point. When Moshe Rabbeinu instructed Betzalel to fashion the kelim, he told him first make the kelim, the Aron, and then make the Mishkan. So Betzalel said to Moshe Rabbeinu, what are we going to do with the kelim in the meantime? Rashi quotes, this is quoted in Chazal in Parshas Pekudei, Rashi in the end of Parshas Pekudei, end of Lamed Ches. We have this whole discussion in Rashi. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Betzalel, says to Moshe, Moshe, what are we going to do? We're going to make the kelim. Where are we going to put it? It's going to be exposed in the yard, on the dock. It's not a kovedik for the Aron HaKodesh to be exposed, for the Shulchan to be exposed, for the Mizbech to be exposed. Is that proper? Can't do that. Let's first build the building. Let's first construct the Mishkan. And then when we finish the Aron, we'll be immediately be able to bring it into the bayis to shelter it so that it can be protected. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, you know what, you're right. You're right. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, indeed, he told this to me. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me to do. And I got a little bit carried away when I told you the instructions. I got excited about the kelim. But really, you're right, the seder, the order and how it should be constructed is first the bayis and then the kelim. Betzalel, you're a genius. It must be that you were standing in the shadow of God when these instructions were handed down to me. Ki Betzalel, okay, that's why he's called Betzalel. Betzalel comes from the word tzel, shade. You were in the shade of HaKadosh Baruch Hu when this mitzvah was handed down to me. So what do we see from this? We see from this that Betzalel, his expertise was not just in his craftsmanship, but was in the Seder HaDvarim. The order, the Seder HaDvarim. Just like Betzalel was able to show that the order that Moshe Rabbeinu gave was not the correct order, it may be correct. The reason why Moshe Rabbeinu still gave the order that the kelim should be made first was because the ikar tafkit of the Mishkan is the kelim. The kelim is the ikar. The bayis is just a location to store the kelim. But when it comes to actually constructing the Mishkan and the kelim, there has to be a different order. This was Betzalel's unique sensitivity. There are things that are the ikarim, the goal, but you have to be practical. When you actually construct and make the things, you have to go in a different seder. Perhaps that is why Betzalel is the one that is given credit with regard to the Aron, because the Aron is a microcosm of the entire Mishkan. What is the Aron? The Aron is Atzei Shitin. Is Atzei Shitin something that is Bakovedik? Not necessarily relative to gold and silver. Everything in the Beis HaMikdash was made from gold and silver. The menorah was pure gold. The kapores was pure gold. The kruvim was pure gold. Everything was plated with gold and silver and copper. Atzei Shitim is not something that is on the same exalted level as gold, especially the menorah. The Aron is shamed in front of the menorah, because the menorah is mikshe achas of gold. The kruvim, the shechina, it's gold. The Aron is eitz, it's wood.
Could be that
the
Aron
represents
Chayim.
It's a living.
Was given on Har Sinai.
Okay, there are different halachim. That it's Chayim. It grows from the ground. It's humility. But still, when everything is said and done, there is a certain degree of shame that the Aron has in the presence of the menorah and the kapores, where the Shechina is resting. Betzalel's sensitivity was such. Moshe Rabbeinu, you told me, Yitzipisa oisoi zahov tohar mi bayis umichutz. I'm going to make a box of wood, and this wood is where we're going to put the luchos. But I have to cover it with gold on the inside and on the outside. So you told me I should first put the gold on the inside. But by putting the gold on the inside, you're leaving the wood exposed on the outside for a longer period of time. It's naked. It's shameful. Let me first shelter its shame by first covering the outside, taking the box of wood, the earliest opportunity that I have, by taking the box of wood and covering it on the outside. That's Derech Eretz. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu told Moshe Rabbeinu, is it Derech Eretz to make Kalim, and the Kalim should sit exposed every Tom, Dick, and Harry is going to come by and look and start analyzing. It's a disgrace. First, let's build the structure, Sinias, and then we'll bring the Kalim that should not be exposed. It's the same thing. The bare part of the Aron is the wood. The wood is beautiful. The wood comes from the ground. It's chayim yilamachazikim ba, but it's still exposed. It's not meant to be exposed. The proof that it's not meant to be exposed because ultimately it will be covered. So when it's exposed, it's shameful. So it's much more important to cover it from the outside first than to cover it from the inside first. Even though it's true that ideally the ikar is covered on the inside, because on the inside is where the luchos are going to rest. That's right. That's the ikar. The ikar, just like the Moshe Rabbeinu commanded Bezalel to first make the kelim and then to make the bayis, because the kelim on the ikar, the kelim is the avoda, the lechem aponim, the menorah, the aron. The kelim is the avoda, but we have to be practical. Before you can do the avoda, you have to have a proper makom, a proper tznius. It's the same thing with regard to the aron itself. You, Moshe Rabbeinu, told me v'tzipisa oiso the zov tar mi bayisu mi chutz. That's taka, the ideal. But in a practical level, when we actually construct it, we're going to make the wood, and we're going to immediately cover the wood by covering the outside, first michutz, and then mibifnim. This was Bezalel's expertise, the sensitivity to practicality.
That was exactly.
So that's why, perhaps, just like we have this idea in reference, Chazal explicitly say this concept at the end of Parshas Pekudei in reference to the whole Mishkan. This idea is a microcosm of this idea specifically in reference to the Oroin. The Aron, the same thing. And that's why Vayas Bezalel es Aron, the Seder, is where Bezalel came and was Mechadesh, something that's not explicit in the Pasuk.
The Aron built before the Menorah?
Was the Aron seemingly yes? Okay, I just gave an example. In front of the Menorah, the Menorah is going to be pure gold, but still, it's meant to be covered. Since the Aron is made from Atzei Shittim and it's meant to be covered, so therefore he was Mishan in the Seder to minimize. What?
No, it wasn't made by anyone.
That was made later. Okay, Moshe was too difficult. Okay, it's an idea. Okay, this is just an idea, something to think about. I think there's something here. Okay, let me tell you another very short idea. This is a very simple idea. Later in Parshas Pekudei, we mentioned the Yichus of Bezalel and Oholiyah. We once spent a lot of time talking about both. Bezalel came from Shevet Yehuda, Oholiyah came from Shevet Dan. Chazal tell us why were there two people in charge of building the Mishkan. One was from the most distinguished Shevet, and Dan was Ma'asev L'chol Machnas. He was from the least distinguished among the Shvatim, to teach you that the Mishkan, no one can come and say members only. The Mishkan is for the entire Klal Yisrael. It was built by someone from the most choshev to the least choshev. I once explained that's why on the Aron there are two lions. Why do we have two lions on top of the Aron HaKodesh? When you come into a shul, you see two lions because both Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Dan are compared to a lion. In the Brachos of Yaakov Avinu, Gur Aryeh Yehuda. And in the brachos of Moshe Rabbeinu, Don, Gur, Aryeh. These two are both compared to lions. So when you come into the Beis HaKnesses, who built the shul? Whose name is on the shul? Whose shul is it? There are two lions. Yehuda, everyone from Yehuda, Bezalel, all the way down to the Oholiyah ben Achismach Lamate Don, the two lions, they represent the entire Klal Yisrael. Okay, but there is an interesting difference. The interesting difference is that when the Torah describes Bezalel, just tells us his yichus. Who is Bezalel? Bezalel, he was Ben Uri, Ben Hur, Lamate Yehuda. They tell us his father, his grandfather, Hur, was killed. He was killed by the Klal Yisrael, by the eagle, Lamate Yehuda, and that's it. That's all we know about Bezalel. When it comes to Don, when it comes to Oholiyah, we don't just tell you who he was, we tell you his skills. Ben Achitza Machl Matan, chorosh v'choyshev v'roikem. He was a craftsman, a chorosh. He was a choyshev. He knew how to make calculations when he stitched, when he did the embroidery work. He knew how to make very complex calculations. V'roikem batchelis v'argamonu v'tlashani. We give you his resume. The Torah presents a detailed resume of Aholiyah, his skills, his experience, everything he did his whole life, everything that he could do. But Salel, no resume. Where's his resume? Nothing. What's the pshat? No, but Salel was hands-on. But Salel was hands-on craftsman. Haloi Dovar comes to But Salel, just his name. Aholiyah, not just the name, the resume. What's the... He made the Aron, no. The Pashto says, no. The understanding is...
He understood how it did.
Okay, so now this is the beginning.
The Pashto says he did Uvitzalel ben Uri ben Chulam Atah Yehuda Asa. It says Asa. He did. Eis kol asher tziva Hashem es Moshe. V'ito. Aholiyah ben Achitzach L'matei Don. And now more. He was a chorosh, a choshev, v'roi came. Three things. Batcheles, v'argamon, plashoni, v'ashesh. Wow. What a resume. What's the pshat? The pshat is, when you're very great, you don't need a resume. The tzalel, that's right, your name says it all. Your name says it all. The tzalel, Shevet Yehuda. Yeshevet Chazal say it's from the most choshev of the Shvatim. The Malchus. You don't need a resume. If you're not the most choshev, you're Aholiyah, then in order to impress the Hamoinam, then you need to mention Chorosh, Choshev, V'roikem. He's qualified. And this is a very powerful Musar Haskel. Powerful Musar Haskel in life is not to work on your skills. It's to work on yourself. If you are true to your profession, you are true to who you are, what you pretend to be, what you have on the resume. If you have a resume and you are really true to the skills on that resume, you don't need a resume. Your name says it all. You need a lawyer? Oh. Everyone knows this person. Wow. Everyone knows. You need a plumber? Oh. You don't need a resume. I can do boilers, and I can do toilets, and I can do sinks, and I know how to do all that. You don't need it. The name says it all. That's the Musar Haskel. Don't work on the resume. Work on yourself. You learn that here from these two individuals. Okay, next short idea. We have here a reference. We have here the Parashas Mekudei. It tells us, it emphasizes the gold and the silver. What did they use the gold and the silver for? Kol hazav, he'asu la'malacha. It doesn't really tell us. There was gold that was made for malacha, b'chol malach zakodesh, shahi zavatnufa. It tells us how much gold there was, period. Then it says, v'chesef, they made a large collection of silver. And it would not be necessary for the Torah to tell us what they used the silver for. But yet it goes on to say, you know what the silver was used for? For two things. Number one, it was used for the Adonim, and it was used also for the hooks on the pillars on the outside of the machaneh. The chesef b'kudei oedah me'as kikar, 100 talents, the elef, and then there was 1,775 that Moshe Rabbeinu forgot about. And what did they use this for? Bekel ha'gogolos. They used this machsa shekel. They used it for vayhi me'as kikar kesef lotzekes es adnei hakodesh. And then it goes on to say what else? They used it for the hooks. The hooks, the vavim lo amudim v'tzipor roshahem v'chishak oisam. What's going on? Why is it when it comes to the gold, it doesn't tell us the gold was used for the menorah, for the kapires, the kruvim, to cover the krushim? There's no mention of what the gold was used for. But when it comes to silver, we emphasize exactly what we use the silver for. And we only give a partial listing because there was more silver used for other things. And we only list two very specific things. Now, to answer this question, we have to first ask a more basic question. What is more choshev, gold or silver? So obviously, you'll tell me gold. Obviously, gold comes first. Yet it's not so simple. Gold may be more valuable, but the Gemara seems to indicate that silver is more choshev. There's a very difficult perek in Masechet Bava Metzia called Hazav. It begins Hazav koine es hakesef, ve'en hakesef koine es hazav. And the Gemara goes on to say that this was a later version of the Mishnah. But the original version was just the opposite. Hakesef koine es hazav, v'en hazav koine es hakesef. And the Gemara says that the reason why there was a switch was because the Yaldusai, when Rabbeinu HaKadosh was young, he thought basically that gold is more valuable than silver. But when he got older and wiser, he came to realize silver is more valuable. Now, what do we mean more valuable? Let's just give a very quick on this, a quick akdama to understand this principle. When it comes to acquisitions in halacha, there's no such thing. When it comes to metaltalin, the only way you acquire is with meshicha. Kesef is not a kinya. Kesef only works for karka. The way you acquire metaltalin, movable property, is through meshicha, through pulling. Pulling into your rishus. If you pull something into your rishus, I pull in a book, a sefer, I automatically have an obligation to pay you. If you have in front of you gold and silver, which one of these is called a commodity and which one is cash? There's no such thing as acquisition by giving money. If I give you money, here's cash, or I take cash, does that automatically transfer ownership of the property to the other party? No, no such thing. Gzeres HaKosef. The way you acquire is by taking a commodity. If I want to trade, barter gold for silver, silver for gold, which one of these two can be used to finalize the transaction? The item that's considered a commodity can be the object which, when you pull into your rishus, will finalize the transaction. If one thing is called cash, and the other, well, the terms are kesef versus peros. If you take the peros, you pull the peros into your rishus, the transaction has been finalized. But if you, then the money is owed. The money is owed. And the money is considered to be more valuable. The money is more valuable, but the money cannot be used to finalize the transaction. The item that is, but so the Gemara has, the Rabbeinu HaKadosh had a dilemma. If you are bartering gold for silver, which one is considered to be the peros, and which one is considered to be the kesef? So he said, when I was young, I used to think the more valuable thing is the gold. Gold is more valuable. And silver, relative to gold, is a commodity. So when you pull in the silver, the transaction has been finalized, and the gold, the money is owed. But when I got older, I realized that even though gold, here's the key words of the Gemara, even though gold may be 25 times more valuable than silver, people do not use gold as currency. It's not lehoitza. And something that circulates, the key word is circulation, circulates, is lehoitza, ultimately has greater value. Gold may be 25 times more valuable than silver, but what's it really worth? It's locked up in Fort Knox. Gold bars. Tafkin, what do people have from the gold? They have money stashed away in the bank. Liquid assets is cash. Liquid assets, kesef, silver, is something that circulates. Coins are made from silver. In Talmud Chazal, even today, there's no such thing as gold coins. Currency is always fashioned in silver. So silver is in this respect more valuable than gold, and the naftamina is. When you're involved in business, if you pull the gold, the cash, the silver is owed. If you pull the silver, nothing has happened. Okay, so that's the basic one. What comes out of this Gemara, something incredibly fascinating, is that silver is more valuable than gold because silver is something which circulates. It moves around. If you were constructing the Mishnah, if you were given the task of designing the Beis HaMikdash, you have to have for the Beis HaMikdash Adonim. What are the Adonim? The Adonim is the foundation. I think the average person would assume that the foundation, the Adonim, should be made from gold. Because this is the cornerstone. We've all heard of going to a cornerstone ceremony. Everyone is there. Everyone comes in their suit and tie. And they take cameras, there's pictures, and the media is present, taking pictures. Cornerstone. So what are the Adonim? The Adonim is the cornerstone of the Mishkan. So you would expect the Adonim to be built from gold. And yet, what are the Adonim made from? Silver. They're made from silver. Machsa shekel. And that's what the Pasuk emphasizes. The kelim inside the Aron, Shulchan, the Menorah, the Mizbeach, Chazav, that's all gold. But the foundation of the Mishkan is made from silver. What else is made from silver? The extreme perimeter. The extreme perimeter of this courtyard, the hooks, which shelter the entire structure, are also made from vovim, the amudim, the hooks, which is the extreme part, is also made from silver. And the Pasuk emphasizes this. There was gold, and there was silver. And the silver was used for the foundation, the most important part, and was also used for the extreme. What's the message? The message is, silver, in one sense, is more valuable. Why is it more valuable? Because silver is something which circulates among the people. And what is it teaching us? The Mishkan is the Mokoyim Hashroas Hashchina. The Mokoyim Hashroas Hashchina is meant lohitza, is meant to circulate. It's not meant to be in one place. When Klal Yisrael travels, the Mishkan travels. When Klal Yisrael was in the middle of 40 years, the Mishkan moved with them. When the Mishkan was put to rest, there was the Beis HaMikdash. When there was the Beis HaMikdash, when there was a Churban, the Shechina continues to travel with Klal Yisrael. The reason why the Adonim, the hooks, the foundation to the extreme, the shelter of this Mokom Kadosh is made from silver is because in this respect, what is the mila that silver has over gold in the Gemara in the beginning of Perek Hazav? Because Kesef Lehoitza, Kesef moves. It travels. By requiring that the Mishkan be built with sockets, Adonim, of silver, it's like the Mishkan is on wheels. It's like the Mishkan is built on wheels. It was built gold, not going anywhere. The Mishkan, it happened one time in the desert, finished. It's over. It remains in the Midbar, we don't know from the Mishkan. The Torah requires the Mishkan to be built with a foundation of silver, and the hooks, meaning the extreme exterior of silver, to teach us that the Mishkan is eternal. The Kedusha of the Mishkan travels with Klal Yisrael from generation to generation, from place to place, because this is how the Gemara Masechta Bava Metzia describes the Chashivas of Kesef. Hazohav koin esa kesef. If I pull gold, gold is a commodity. It's peros. Then the transaction is finalized. The money is owed. The silver is owed. That has the connotation that silver is more chashev. Really? Silver is more chashev than gold? The Gemara says that's right. Because silver is lohitza. Because silver is something which moves, circulates. It moves about. There's benefit for the average man. Gold is locked up in the bank. The Mishkan is built on a foundation of silver, not on the foundation of gold, to teach us that the Mishkan travels with us in history and throughout Klal Yisrael.
The Adonim were in the sand, or the...
What? The Adonim? What do you mean? The Adonim was on the ground, on the surface.
Was silver was on the surface, and they plugged in the...
The Krushim was.
The Krushim was stuck into the Adonim.
The Krushim would. And they.
In Shiloh, the Mishkan. Was it the Mishkan in Shiloh?
The Krushim?
Rabbi?
I thought the Adonim were put into the ground.
They were resting on the ground. They were resting on the ground.
They weren't buried.
No, so why didn't they?
The whole thing was a miracle. The fact that it stood was Al Derech Nes.
The Adonim was down.
And you had the hooks and the rings up there.
Okay, to conclude, I'll just tell you a short...
In
Shiloh? They had a different Mishkan. They were no longer... I don't think they were Krushim anymore. It was a different Mishkan.
So they built a whole different Mishkan?
Whole different Mishkan.
Because it was in the same pattern as the...
Not exactly. We don't really know. It's a big mystery what exactly it looked like. The Gemara is something that was part of it was stone, part of it was Urias, there was stone walls. Stone walls with Urias were still there. Mishkan took 369 years. Shiloh is one of the biggest mysteries. What exactly? The whole, they know where Shiloh is today, but they're trying to dig it up. Now it's becoming a whole trying to dig up to see if they find any artifacts. But okay, just to conclude one last part. I mean, I told this part a while ago, but just to conclude that we have the Mishkan repeated twice. Once in Parshas Tumah Tetzaveh, Ve'ach B'Kudei. The main difference between the two is in Parshas Tumah Tetzaveh, it's anonymous. There's no name. Who owns the Mishkan? The Mishkan is the bias of Hashem. Hashem says, make me a Mishkan. No one's name is associated with the Mishkan. In Parashas Vayakav Ukudei, it's word for word. The only difference is, after every single section, 18 times, Ka'asher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe. It's Moshe's Mishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu, it's all his. Everything here is Moshe, Moshe, Moshe. When you go to a shul, is it members only? Or is a shul a makom that's for the tzibur? When a person builds a basement, does he have a responsibility? Anyone can come. You need a minyan, so anyone can walk inside. You see here, there are two different, there has to be a balance. Mitzad echad, parashas Tumah Tetzaveh, the Mishkan is anonymous. A Mishkan, Bizman Hazeh, a Mikdash Ma'at. Every shul is a Mikdash Ma'at, Kasher, that's anonymous. No one's name is attached to it. Yet in Parashas, members only. This is Moshe's place. You come here, you're coming under the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu. Well, what is it? Is it members only, Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe? Or is it? Well, obviously, it's somewhere in between. The fact that Torah repeats the thing that if you have a makom that's too... There's sometimes you come to shul where there's a figure who's too dominant. It's not a healthy situation. Not everyone gets along with. Okay, that's for convenience. Okay, in a chanami, there are certain rules. You have to play by the rules. But we see here two different types of mishkanos. A mishkan that's hefker. You walk into shul, ish hayosha be'ein av yas. One nusach, whoever gets up to the omen, he gets to daf, whatever he wants. Is that? But then, this Moshe, there are rules. The combination of the two together shows us there has to be some type of balance. You have to give people freedom to express themselves in their own way, but yet there is a requirement that there be a certain mahalich, a certain hashkafa, and that's the Mishkan from this week's parsha. Chazak, chazak, v'nis chazek. Good shot.